This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to our NBA draft version of the NBA Team Podcast. I've been looking forward to this one. I am your co-host, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by Adam Murray.
Is it draft time already?
It is. It is.
And finally, after, 8,000 weeks of when the lottery will be and all the smoke screens and I'm not practicing for you and... I only want to work with this guy, and we'll work out together.
I remember a time where the draft, I sound like an old man river here, but I remember a time where the draft coverage, like online and such, it used to really just rotate between April, right after March Madness, when the tournament ends and people declare for the draft, and then when the draft ends at the end of June, and then it kind of goes into hibernation mode. Now, draft coverage with the college game and one-and-dones and all the workouts and all the declarations, it's year-round now. It's almost like its own type of news strip that you have to follow every single day because there's always some kind of a development. It's just that it's so much more active between May and June because that's when the draft is really kicking in.
Yeah, the agents don't want their guys to go against anybody else, so everybody's just doing them versus nobody, and them versus chairs, and I don't know.
Did you like the new? Did you even get to watch the new revision that they did with the NBA Combine where they do the 5-on-5 drills?
Yeah, they did the 5-on-5, but it wasn't really.
It didn't show me anything.
Oh wow, look at these. This guy might make it to the second round. Oh well, that's gonna be.
It was only good for players who no one had heard of and came in kind of delivered a little bit. There was a French center named Mohamed Jeté, and he played in the 5-on-5s, and that might help a guy like
that. It worked for Jeté. It worked for Christmas.
Rakeem Christmas, yeah, at Syracuse.
Rakeem Christmas and J.P. Tokoto.
Tokoto from North Carolina, yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to get into all these guys pretty soon. So, Adam was saying, once they go into the private workouts, the team workouts, which you might see in very small couplets, is that even a word, a couplet?
Couplets?
And little droplets. You see it a little bit, on Twitter. They leak them a little bit, but the agents will never let you see them do the one-on-one drills that the team workouts usually encompass, where you really find out what the team was looking for and what kind of drills they put them through. And you don't really see a lot of that. That's all behind closed doors. And
you don't want to
really
see that.
Where decisions are made.
Yeah, but then the agents are like, well, we'll only showcase the good parts and we'll only do, we'll go to his strengths. It's just like everybody's just trying to hide everything from everybody.
Yeah, that's the agent's job. Don't make your client look weak,
But it doesn't make the client look weak, but it's not like, it's not like you only have one client per one agent. Like, you're harming your guy to get, to help your other guy.
Didn't I just read that one of the major power agents just took a job with –
Oh, Aaron Teller's going to the Pistons?
That's what it is? Okay. Which is funny because they already had Stan Van Gundy's running the show, and Jeff Bauer, who's one of his yes men, he's one of the presidents. So basically Aaron Teller is going to be Stan Van Gundy's understudy? Is that what it is?
Pretty much, just yeah.
And they were the first one to actually swing a deal. They traded Caron Butler and do you remember who the other guy may have been?
Garbage.
Yeah, a guy named Garbage.
Guys who won't, yeah.
In exchange for Ersan Ilyasova. So they're already on the move, with their moves, and they're one of the lottery picks. This is going to be the format that we're going to be talking about for the NBA draft because, obviously, there's so many different ways that people do it. We're going to do it a little differently. We're going to talk about the teams in the order in which the picks are made from 1 to whatever the later picks are for each team. So, for example, the team with the highest pick will start first, but we'll talk about all of their picks. So, you know, for example, the Minnesota Timberwolves have the first overall pick, but they also have 2 second-round picks. So we'll try to predict who the Timberwolves might take in those later picks, and then we'll just go down from there until we get to the last team at the either at the lowest round or the Clippers, who have no picks. So we'll just kind of go that way. But for this version portion of the NBA podcast episode for the draft, we're going to talk about the lottery teams, teams that didn't make the playoffs. In this case, this actually is a situation in which all of them are non-playoff teams. You know how sometimes playoff teams sneak into that lottery? We don't have that this year.
Not that this year. But I have a question for you just to sort of start everything off.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the worst one-and-done class we've ever seen?
2013 was pretty bad. That was the one that had I don't even remember too many of the one-and-dones. That's how bad it was. You know, the top pick was Anthony Bennett. That was a one-and-done. I'd probably think about that one.
But the fact that so many came out who really are nothing.
Yeah. For anybody who wants to track back, we did one about the one-and-dones back in the – I think in the winter. And we talked about which ones were the best. We did not like the 2013 class. But this one's pretty bad. I think the top is good, though.
2013 was Bennett, McLemore, Shabazz Muhammad, and Archie Goodwin.
Yeah, 2014 with Levine or Levine, whatever way tomato.
Levine.
Andrew Wiggins, Jabari Parker. You know, I don't know if you heard the news, but Joel Embiid had another setback with a stress fracture. So now it's almost looking like he might not play at all again at the summer league. So if he's ready, it might be by the time we get into training camp in October. I don't know how it's going to work out for Mr. Embiid, but, you know, all best wishes to him. So he could try to at least get his career started. You know, he hasn't even played a game yet.
Well, that's what Philly wanted. So they got what they wanted, and he played nothing and made $4 million, and they're back where they are.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to be back to where they were last year almost. But let's go ahead and get kicked off here with the NBA draft. The first pick, the team that got the number one pick in the lottery, was the worst team in terms of record, the 16-66 Minnesota Timberwolves. If anybody wants to really get a full detailed breakdown of how we felt about all of these teams, we're not going to touch on it too closely because we already did those Gone Fishing episodes where if you really want to dive into each team, trust me, you're taken care of there. But we're just going to kind of skimmy a little bit. I'll have Adam Murray take the floor here. What do the Timberwolves need?
They need a doctor. They need to get Dr. Dre with the number one pick or Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman or somebody, because the problem was their team isn't that bad. It's just they never were healthy, with Rubio gone for 3/4 of the season, Pekovic gone, Kevin Martin was gone, Chase Buttinger was gone.
Mm-hmm.
They just couldn't stay healthy. And
Pekovic, you said, yeah. You saw some signs there with Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine. I mean, it seems like things are going well there. Gorgui Dieng's decent. I thought they made a nice late season trade there with Adrian Payne, where they had to give up nothing to get him. And then
they gave up a potential first for him, which is a horrible. You don't give up, you know, considering how bad they've been, they don't give up anything for.
Conditionally given how bad they are, it's a highly doubtful they're going to give up the pick, though.
Yeah, plus they owe so many picks to different people. They got Payne. The problem was they tried by trading for Thaddeus Young at the beginning of the year, only to dump him for Garnett. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one thing about the Timberwolves is you can't just don't read the articles about them, because all the stat guys just bash them like, oh, Andrew Wiggins is statistically the worst guy of all time. It's like, well, there's nobody else on the team.
No.
You can't help but not be bad and have plus minus and WARP.
When you're a rookie and in the second half of the year like they did with him, and you have him be the go-to guy, you're going to struggle. You know, I thought he handled the season pretty well. You know, I thought he had a couple of good highlights. He had some good statistical nights. I thought LaVine really turned a corner in the after the All-Star break as a point guard when filling in for Rubio. When Rubio came back, they played a lot better. even though better doesn't necessarily mean they had a winning record. They were still pretty bad. But all my notes here I have for needs, everything but small forward and point guard, pretty much, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Defense, size, shooting, pretty much anything in those corners you can go after. So with the number one pick, who do the Minnesota Timberwolves take, Adam?
Well, pretty much just by default, they have to take Towns.
Okay, so you're talking about Karl-Anthony Towns, the center out of Kentucky. We'll talk about Kentucky a lot because they have a lot of players that are going to be in the mix here. The other one that people are banging about, obviously, was the team that won the national championship and the guy who people were considering the consensus number one from October on, and that was Jahlil Okafor at Duke. Did you ever consider him in that, you know, in that debate?
No, because he doesn't really fit. You know, it's he doesn't fit on that team.
Because of Pekovic?
Because of Pekovic, Dang is really the same type of player. And
well, Dang's a defensive center. Okafor's an offensively minded center, pretty much. You know.
Yeah, but they're both slow. With Towns, you have good footwork.
Yeah, he's got definitely defensive foot speed to track people down.
You have the mechanics that really you don't really see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he has a good motor. If you want to put, you know, you want to put a motor guy next to a Wiggins and, you know, a Levine, go a nice little fast-paced energy team.
If you have a potential, like, just looking down the road, if you have, like, a combination of Levine, Wiggins, Karl-Anthony Towns, what kind of a team are we looking at in, like, 2017, 2018?
That has to be all pure run and gun.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking, too. I mean, it's you got a team that can just go on the fly, and they can block shots, and they can get to the free throw line, and they can attack you off the wing. Everybody saw Kentucky because of their undefeated season, how everybody was like religiously following it for the on the college basketball season. What did you see out of Towns, though?
The thing about Kentucky is, like, they were very tough to watch because you couldn't get a feel on anybody.
Yeah, it was very much all for one, one for all type of deal.
It was, you know, like, okay, everybody out, next group in, and, well, I was trying to, you know, figure out, well, what is he like? Oh, wait, no, he's out. Or there was nobody got their rhythm, it seemed.
No. They did go to town. Downs was, like, basically their go-to guy in stretches of games where they were trailing, which was rare. But when they were down and they needed a bucket, they went to Towns.
The thing about Towns I saw was, he seemed hesitant to become the guy. Like, mm-hmm. he's good mechanics, good motion, good, you know, skill, but he didn't seem like he wanted to be it.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of passiveness to Towns' game, a little bit. Like, I don't think he is completely assertive as a big man. I think that's one thing Okafor might have the jump on Towns.
Yeah, Okafor has that mean streak to,
like,
give the ball
I'm
to
I'm going
me.
After you, and if I get an offensive foul, so be it. You know, that kind of thing.
And you didn't really see that in Towns. And obviously the way the NBA is and the way this draft is, you know, we're going to be saying this a lot, doesn't really have much of a post game.
No, not at all.
And you're going to see, you know, again, we're going to see maybe one or two power forwards who have one. So it's not, you know, not necessarily negative. It's just that seems to be the way we're going is let's learn to all shoot threes instead of doing,
Is there a comparison with Towns that you can muster up? On the fly.
Right now, you know, you disagreed with me earlier on this, but I said right now he looks like a Vlade Divac.
Oh, okay. I think that's a little too passive, if you know what I mean. I don't know if he's one of the floppier, you know, jump shot and kind of go around you type of centers like Vlade was. I'll give you one, and this is a Calipari Kentucky guy. He reminds me a little bit of DeMarcus Cousins. He doesn't have the mean streak of DeMarcus Cousins, though.
See, that's the thing. I don't see the mean streak, and I don't see that I'm going to barrel you over it either.
I think he's got a nice jump shot like Cousins does, even though it's a little funky. And I just think he's got the ability to move around the inside of the inside from the box all the way out to about 20 feet.
Agreed.
To track a person down.
So in that sense, he looks like he could become an Aldridge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good one, too.
So, you know, like I said, right now he looks like Vlade, but can develop into
– offensively, as a big man, nobody is LaMarcus Aldridge. That takes a lot of work. But
yeah, it takes a lot of work. But again, you know, you're basing this off 30, 40 games, and they're only playing, you know, 25, 30 minutes of each game. So not really much to go off.
The other two picks are high second-round picks for the Timberwolves. The number 31 pick, which is like the very first pick of the second round, and the 36th pick in the in the second round, about five picks later. So what do you see? You just give me a guess. Tell me an idea of what they need, and we'll just kind of try to cross it off.
Oh, they need really – the problem is that what they need is they don't need more youth.
Okay.
They don't need two more picks. So obviously one of those should be a you know, draft and stash.
Okay.
Like if a Seti Osman falls down.
The small forward out of Turkey.
Yep.
Okay,
small forward out of Turkey. I liked him, but he sort of reminded me of did I say Jiri Welch? I believe.
Yeah, you know, Jiri Welch did get decent minutes in the NBA for a year or two. You know, I would consider that a compliment compared to a lot of the second round Euros who never ever see the game of basketball.
Yeah,
know?
That's what I compare him to, sort of like a Jiri Welch type player, which, you know, everyone seemed to hate him, but I was like, he was okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you need one of him, and then also maybe sort of
let me give you one. If you need more size, which they definitely need, what about Rashawn Holmes, the Bowling Green power forward, who played great as in the senior camp?
Yeah, he's rising. You know, he's one of the risers from the camp who went from nothing to second round pick. But
yeah,
the problem with him, he's undersized. He's like 6'8".
Yeah, he's kind of like I'm trying to find a really decent comparison for him, just based on like miscellaneous players in the NBA. He's a little bit like Chuck Hayes, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you can see that. You know, you need like an energy size type guy. Like, if you're just gonna go make a Jordan, you know, your LSU guys, Mickey or Martin.
Well, it would probably be Jordan Mickey. He's gonna go later than Martin will.
If they fall, he gives you size. He gives you energy. Does he know what he's doing? No, not really. But
So you want to go? You want to go with Mickey here?
Sure.
Okay. Let's flip that. We'll say that Mickey goes 31st, and then Osman goes 36. I mean, that's pretty reasonable anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's the thing, is they don't need. You know, they're better off just packaging their picks and trading them for future picks, and because the last thing they need is more youth.
I understand what you're saying. I get it. All right, we're going to go to the second overall pick. The team that I don't think a lot they were kind of at a risk of losing this pick to I believe it was Philadelphia, right? If they had dropped out of the top five or the top three. But once they got into the top three, they were sitting pretty. Then they climbed up to number two after the Sixers got that third envelope. And you're thinking, uh-oh, they might get number one. But they got the number two pick, which is still really, really good for them. And that's the L.A. Lakers. Their season was pretty bad. Kobe got hurt again. Without Kobe, they were lost souls like we expected. Julius Randle, who was their top lottery pick, broke his leg literally one quarter into the season.
7 minutes into the season, he's gone. Kobe.
Yeah.
Kobe was like, I'm Kobe. We can still win.
And you know what the shame of that is? I like Julius Randle. I saw him in preseason. I saw him in summer league. I thought he looked really good. I thought he was going to be a good fit for L.A. So even though he had the injury, the freak injury, I think he's going to work out well for them. So I think a power forward, they might be okay if Julius Randle, with that year of experience under practice, really shows what he can do. So would you consider power forward still a need for the Lakers?
Everything is still a need for the Lakers. Well, you know, okay, you like Randall, but how high is his ceiling right now? Do you see him being this all-star guy out of the gate?
No, I don't see him. I don't see him as an all-star. I see him kind of in the vein of like a Kostas Koufos. I think he could be one of those just really nice big man players that can get about 15 points, 7 rebounds. I think that's a ceiling.
That's not a great comparison.
Oh, you mean Koufos? Yeah. I'm trying to just think off the top of my head. What about Ed Davis? A better version of Ed Davis.
Okay, so you know, if you got your better Ed Davis, you still sort of could, if somebody comes along, be like, oh, I'm not going to turn them away.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, he was the sixth pick in that draft. Now they have number two. So Towns went number one, and a lot of people see this as a two- or three-man draft between Towns, Okafor, and D'Angelo Russell at Ohio State, who we'll talk about either now or later. Who do you like here, number two, for the Lakers?
It seems they've settled on Okafor. A lot of the others, a smokescreen with Russell and
Moutier,
and they supposedly wowed by Kristaps as everybody else is, and Okafor seems to be the safest pick for them, as you know they don't really have a center or many center prospects, and especially next year since their pick will probably go to Philly.
But what does that say with the centers? You know, with the first two going that high, and then later on in the first round or the lottery, we're going to probably see Willie Cauley-Stein, Miles Turner, Frank Kaminsky. What does that say about the center position and how dire the need is for a center in the NBA now, like a true 7-footer?
Well, it's changed. You don't, you know, the slow 7-footer, you know, muscle guy. That era is over for now. But
it doesn't mean you can't take a chance on getting one when it's available, like a Towns or an Okafor, a 6'11", 7-foot guy that can score in the post.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, that's just the way the draft is. It's just really just these two at top and really a steep drop off of the position.
Mm-hmm.
So it just happens. That's just the way the cards fell this year. Look at the guards and the wings. It's a very weak class for them.
Yeah, well, they're so incomplete. And, I mean, shooting guard, I think the weakest of the positions in this one is shooting guard. But I think that just comes with the territory because shooting guard – nobody is a good shooting guard coming out of college anymore, even if you're like a four-year player. But let's get back on the Lakers here. Okafor, great. Great deep post player. Once he gets his right hand off the glass, I mean, you cannot stop him because he's got the long arms, he's got the big paws, as Eddie Sutton used to always say, and he can just he's almost got a Tim Duncan game to him,
yeah.
An old man game, if you will. What do you see out of Okafor?
He has just looking at him. Everyone's like, oh, he's like Al Jefferson. He's like Al Jefferson. Then I'm like, all right, come on. This kid at least can play defense, right? No.
No, he's very bad on the pick and roll.
And that's, you know, that's not what you really want from your top center, is to be a center who can't play defense.
Mm-hmm. So,
Al Jefferson seems to be the right thing for me.
You like the comparison with Al Jefferson?
Yeah, it seems to fit. Sometimes, you know, the consensus is right.
Yeah, now, Al Jefferson, it took him a little while to kind of get going in his career, but he turned out to be really, really good, got to an all-star game. So you're telling me that Jahlil Okafor can be an all-star with the Lakers?
Possibly.
But can he be a star player?
That I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Like, just watching the Duke tape, I'm like, there are times there where he just looked like the third best player on that team.
I feel like this is a situation, and maybe Byron Scott's the perfect person for this because of the fact that he doesn't like to play too fast. I think a slow game, a slow tempo is perfect for Okafor, where you kind of run things through him, things slow down. You don't have to not everything is a blur for him. It will be easier for him to pick up stuff, and you can, if you want to centralize things around him after Kobe retires or when his contract expires and leaves, whatever comes first. Then we'll see what happens with Okafor. I think that you can try to build one season around him and see how it goes going into his second year. I like him as an offensive post player. I think that that's highly valuable. We saw that – we've seen that in Memphis for the last 5 years. When you have big men like that, you know, and you're able to get decent production on a consistent basis, I don't know if Randall can be that kind of a player yet, but I think Okafor can.
Well, the thing about Okafor is you pretty much nailed it on the head, was he has post skills, which lots of big guys don't have them right now. Towns doesn't have them.
It's almost like big men are scared to be in the post. They're almost like, no, I want to diversify my game. I want to shoot. I want to do this. I want to attack the basket. It's like, no.
It's like they'd rather become specialists as opposed to being complete, you know, beasts.
Yes, and I think if Okafor develops the defense and he starts to improve there, I mean – this is going to – it's hard to call it a steal at number two, depending on what Towns does, but it would be a really good catch for the Lakers.
It seems to be a better fit for them than, you know, because I don't think they're looking to I don't know. Are they going to try to contend next year, or
no?
Are they still going to take another year off?
I feel like that they're going to opt in on some of these other contracts with people like Jordan Hill, Xavier Henry, Wesley Johnson. Them, they might keep them. Ryan Kelly's going to be there another year. I know that Boozer and Lynn are gone, so I don't know what they're going to do to plug in those needs. And then you got one more year of Kobe, and that's probably going to be his farewell season. So I just feel like this is going to be another lost year, and then they start to get serious.
Oh, because just clear everybody out and
yeah.
Well, you know, in that case, hopefully Randall and Okafor or Towns or whoever they draft us don't become pawns in the let's try to buy a team. Hopefully they try to develop some young guys. And
The intrigue here with the Lakers is that they have the 27th overall pick, the 27th overall pick in the first round, and then they have the 34th pick, which is the fourth pick of the second round, which is actually quite high. I think they got one of these picks in the Jeremy Lin trade. So they added a second pick there. So what do you see, like, what kind of needs do the Lakers really have, like truly have?
They need everything, but they don't want anything. They just need people to, they just need bodies really, essentially, because they spent last year going, let's just get, you know, retreads and maybe somebody will be good. Mm-hmm. You know, again, with the Wesley Johnson, Xavier Henry, they all turn out to be garbage.
Okay. What kind of, like, give us a position and we'll try to figure one out here.
Point guard?
Well, you know, there's the rumors about them working out Russell and Moutier, but we think they're still going to take Okafor. Cameron Payne will be gone. Grant will be gone. Then you got, like, DeLon Wright, Terry Rozier, Olivier Hanlon, Tyus Jones. What about DeLon Wright? You think DeLon Wright will still be there, the point guard out of Utah?
He could be there, you know, because that's, you know, once the problem with the point guards is there's such a glut of them down at the bottom of the first round.
Yeah.
With Wright, Grant,
and they're all kind of bundled together. Like they're almost equal in terms of potential, but they all have glaring weaknesses. They're very, very different. Like DeLon Wright is like a defensive point guard with good height. Tyus Jones is itty bitty, but he's a great shooter and he's clutch. Jerian Grant is athletic. Cameron Payne's a good shooter, but they all have gaping holes in different parts of their game. If you could put them all together and make one player, you'd have like a great point guard, but unfortunately you can't do that in this world. So would you say Wright? Let's just pencil Wright in there and see if someone else might try to reach to get him.
You put Wright or Rozier or...
Terry Rozier is kind of like Jordan Clarkson. That's why I'm kind of like, I don't know why they would pick him.
Yeah, but they're not really married to Clarkson.
Okay. So let's go with Rozier then, because I'm starting to get the feeling that DeLon Wright's going to be gone.
Okay.
The number 34.
Fine by me.
you have no arguments there.
34th pick, they'll just get another body.
A big man, you'd say?
They'll get a big man, probably, you know, a power forward to try to maybe
what about Christian Wood at UNLV?
No, he'll sneak into the first round.
Well, oh yeah, because this is the part of the second round. Cliff Alexander at Kansas.
Cliff Alexander is a name you could look at. Maybe you know, a Rakeem Christmas.
Okay, so you want to go with Christmas there? That'd be two centers. I mean, I know that they're thin in that position, but because that
Davis you said Cliff Alexander.
Yeah, so you want to go with Alexander at the power forward spot?
Yeah, well, they need a backup to if one of the two fail.
He went to the workouts, and he had like crazy body fat percentage, like 3%. Like he was all muscle. The problem was that he was declared ineligible due to some sort of stupid thing that didn't make any sense. So he wasn't able to play in the NCAA tournament or the last week or so of the regular season for Kansas. And he didn't really shine a lot, you know, for Kansas, unfortunately for him. So it wasn't like Embiid where his stock soared. It kind of tumbled. So some people might even see that as a steal if he goes in the second round.
Yeah, that's why he's a long-term prospect, and, you know, just dump him in the D-League for a year or two, and, you know, he could become that third, you know,
and just in case, you know, he's a good replacement for Ed Davis, and just in case Julius Randle gets hurt again or has injury woes, maybe you can plug him in and see how it goes. But I don't know if he's a starter in the NBA by any measure. But we'll go ahead with there. For the Lakers, we've got Jahlil Okafor out of Duke, Terry Rozier, a scoring – like a two-guard out of Louisville, and then the big man out of Kansas, Cliff Alexander. Let's move on to the Philadelphia 76ers. These guys are a joke amongst themselves in terms of their futility. They just don't – it's almost like – you talk about how the Lakers don't want to be good. The 76ers run away from being good.
Yeah, they have that. We're going to hit the big lottery ticket. We're going to hit that big lottery ticket. We're going to hit that big lottery ticket. And
they've struck out quite two or three times now.
They've been striking out a lot, like from, you know, Embiid, as you mentioned, his setback, to Dario Saric. They want him to come over next year. He's like, I'm not so sure I want to.
No. I mean, well, there's the reports also with Joel Embiid that the stress fracture that he suffered is actually not healing as quickly as they thought because they were trying to work him out really hard to get him ready for summer league. And he felt okay, but when they went to the doctors, they noticed that it wasn't healing quickly. So they might shut him down for summer league. We might not see Embiid at all until training camp or preseason. So it's not looking good for him.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's reports, maybe smoke screens is that.
D'Angelo Russell, the point guard at Ohio
State,
doesn't
want to play there and is shut down. You know, people are avoiding Philly at all costs now. And, you know, to an extent, would you really want to go there?
But you get a lot of playing time and you get good numbers, you know, so that when your rookie deal's up, you can go anywhere you want.
But there's a difference between getting playing time, which you'll get on all these teams. Most of these teams in the basement with, you know, depending upon what Sacramento does.
I think the top four for sure. After Orlando, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, but there's minutes for most of the lottery.
To be had, yeah.
Yes. But there's just that losing culture, and do you want to be part of that team who the team has basically told you, like, we don't want to try hard. You go get your numbers, but we're not, you know.
Okay, the Sixers went through a rash of trades 2 years in a row. At the end of the 2014 season, they dumped almost every good player that they had to tank it. They got they got two first-round picks. The highest one was third. They took Embiid, and then they took Saric, who was a stash. Then they had another trade where they traded away Michael Carter-Williams, who was their rookie of the year the previous season, to the Milwaukee Bucks in this gargantuan trade that involved them, the Suns, the Bucks, and I think the Heat jumped in there somehow, or maybe the Celtics jumped in there somehow. And so they have no point guard. Would it make sense to pick D'Angelo Russell out of Ohio State?
Well, with them, well, he hasn't torn his ACL, so it seems like damaged goods to me. In fact, he's too healthy. For one, let's point this out. They're not going to contend next year because they traded for JaVale McGee and just cut him with his $10 million salary.
I think they did that only to show that they were trying to use cap.
Well, yeah, but the point is they've already said we're not going to be in contention next year because we already have this $10 million weight on our – so we're not going to try for a third year in a row. So
well, does he fill in the Sixers' biggest need? Like, I mean, he's a good shooter. I mean, I think he's a good shooter off the dribble. I don't know how good he is at a standstill. He's got a tremendous court vision. He's got the best court vision among all the players in the draft. And his athleticism is decent, not great. But in terms of point guard skills, he's probably number one.
No, this is where you and I disagree. I don't see him. He's not a point guard. He's a combo guard.
Like a Russell Westbrook.
He is. Like, my comparison to him was Brandon Roy.
Yeah, but he's not as tall as Roy.
Well, you know, I'm saying, okay, fine, a smaller Brandon Roy.
like a Smurf Brandon Roy.
Does that make it
how
better
about,
then?
How about Damian Lillard?
Oh, it's always a bigger Damian Lillard.
you know, a scorer, yeah. like a point guard with a scorer's mentality, you know?
Yeah, not a true point guard. Like, everyone, you know, he has the highest, him and Moutier have the highest potential, I think, of all the people in the class.
Because they might be able to switch over to shooting guard in different sets where they can run off of screens and try to get themselves open. I don't know if Moutier can do that. I know Russell can do that.
But you know, the thing is, like, you know, it's they got rid of a combo guard in Carter Williams to get another combo guard. And, you know, is he really worth it? Is he, you know.
Do you think that they traded Carter Williams with the idea in mind that Russell would be available? because he started rising pretty quickly around February when he started averaging 20 points a game at Ohio State.
No, because they're not going in to say we want, because they're still aiming for the number one pick, and they're not going to be like, well, we're going to take this guy at number one. Even though at the beginning of the year, everyone pretty much said Towns was.
But yeah, you got Towns and Okafor, but if you take Okafor or Towns, let's dip into that. Say, for example, Russell goes to the Lakers at two. If Towns or Okafor is available, I mean, should the Sixers take that guy? I mean, you already got Embiid, you already got Nerlens Noel. I mean, Saric is a big man. Like, is it even worth it?
You are very short-sighted.
Oh,
apparently, in your world, you take the draft pick and you have to keep him instantly. Mm-hmm. Of course, you take Towns and you sell him to the highest bidder.
Oh,
how
like
many first round picks can I get for him?
Like the Pelicans did with Nerlens Noel. They got him for Drew Holiday, who's been hurt more than Nerlens Noel has.
You know, but no, it's just, well, we have him. Okay, now who wants him? We have no need for him. Or, hell, even with, you know, if Embiid's still out, okay, we found his replacement. Who wants Embiid? Who wants to give us more first-round picks? Because that's all they really want.
So you're saying you got to take one of those big men if he falls, just in the event that you might be able to get more value out of him from a team that wants him desperately.
Who, you know, there's a playoff team who can't, you know, let's say
the Pacers.
In the bottom of the first round. Mm-hmm. Or we got the Pacers, let's say the Celtics, even the Mavericks. Mm-hmm. They don't have the draft pieces to move up, mm-hmm. but okay, let's start packaging players and future picks now that the draft is done.
Yeah, and that's one part that obviously we're not going to be able to touch on, you know, until the actual draft occurs, and that's trades involving pre-existing players and contracts. I mean, that is a constant. I mean, especially
I know that's
second
a headache.
Round.
I know it's a headache, but I'm saying if they're going for the number one pick, they're not going to be like, well, let's take the third best guy. We'll just, you know, we'll do a Weber for Penny type deal.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
You know, I'll draft him, but you want him, you're going to give me two first-rounders for him, three first-rounders.
Yeah, or do what the Browns did with Trent Richardson. Remember when they moved up, like, maybe three spots and they gave up a first-rounder to do it?
One spot.
Yeah, one spot. They took
Trent
Richardson.
One spot because they were afraid Minnesota would take him. Like, what? Like, there was no...
Well, that's what happens when Kevin Costner's your general manager. So Russell's the pick here if Okafor and Towns are gone, right?
Yeah, they seem to like him. I much prefer Moutier. He seems more of a...
But would you go on a limb and say that you will pick Moutier?
I would rather pick him.
I think says Russell.
I think given you have Noel and Embiid, I think you want more of
an athletic point guard.
As opposed to a combo guard who's looking for his own shot.
I think they need scoring in the worst way, so I think they'll just go with Russell anyway. So I'll override you on this occasion.
They're probably going to. I just said I would do.
You would do it. Yeah, that's kind of showing up all of a sudden. A lot of people like Moutier. I got a feeling we're going to be talking about him pretty soon. The second round is just ridiculous. I want to actually kind of touch on how they got these picks because I think it's hilarious. They got the number 35 pick in a trade from the Orlando Magic that involved a swap with Alfred Payton and Dario Saric. They got the number 37 pick from the Houston Rockets involving a trade in this season that involved Isaiah Cannon and KJ McDaniels. They got the number 47 pick from the Washington Wizards in a trade a while ago that involved Andre Miller, Jan Vesely, and Eric Mayner. The number 58 pick they also got from the Houston Rockets in the Corey Brewer trade, you know, that we had talked about that they had midseason. And then the number 60 pick they got from the Indiana Pacers in a trade that involved Danny Granger and Evan Turner. And then before that, the Golden State Warriors had that pick, and they had traded it for Brandon Rush. So all these picks have been just bandied about and moved around, and now the Sixers have them. What are the chances that the Sixers keep all five picks?
Not very good.
Okay, but we got to guess anyway. So let's go ahead and you pick one, and then I'll go. So that means you're going to get three, and I'll get two.
They'll take the good Harrison.
The good, which one? Andrew, the point guard?
Yeah, the one who's going to get drafted.
You think he'll go 35th?
Well, I could put him in any position, 47th maybe.
So Andrew Harrison there at number at number 35. For number 37, I think I think they're gonna need a shooting guard. I'll go with I'll go with Michael Qualls from Arkansas. All athlete, tremendous athlete. Yours is here 47.
I thought I picked Harrison at 47.
Oh, you picked Harrison at 47.
I'd say Rakeem Christmas because he tore his ACL at 35.
Okay, so you like Christmas.
Only because he tore his ACL.
When did he tear the ACL?
Didn't he get injured halfway through?
No, that was Chris McCullough.
Oh, and they'll take him.
Oh, so they'll go with McCullough because he's rising too into the first round because they like it. They like what he can do, even though he's got some limitations due to the injury. You think Christmas is going to rise into the first?
Oh, no, he's not going to rise to the first. Okay, so we're going 47th since they botched that 35th pick. they're going to go international. One of the names, the only one of the few international names that seem to be rising is Luka Mitrovic.
Okay.
He is a small forward, power forward from Croatia. His name has sort of popped up.
I'm trying to look for his name. Is he a power forward, a small forward?
He's a 3/4.
He's a 3/4.
He's 6'9".
So that's your pick there. And then there's number 58. These are two of the last three picks of the whole thing. Someone's going to be Mr. Irrelevant. I'll give you that guy. I'm gonna throw one to Justin Rosero. I'll say LaDante Henton at Providence at number 58.
All right, then.
I don't think it's going to happen, but I just wanted to be nice for him. Mr. Irrelevant.
Go Alpha Kaba, center from France.
Bless you. Alpha Kaba, and that is actually spelled A-L-P-H-A.
Yep.
Alpha Kaba out of France as the center for the last pick for the Sixers. We have no idea if any of these guys are going to wind up going to the Sixers, but you know, they did wind up using a lot of their second rounders last year. Jeremy Grant was one of them at Syracuse. He played a lot. KJ McDaniels, before he got traded to the Rockets, played a decent amount for the Sixers. He was a surprise. And then I'm trying to remember another one that they had in the second round that wound up playing a little bit for him. There was one more, and I'm just losing thought of who he was. But the Sixers do get value out of their second round picks because they have to play him because they don't have any other talents.
Well, yeah, that's unfortunately, you know, everyone's all this trust in our GM, and that's his strategy is let's hope we sort of strike gold with our second round picks, and then we can sell them high and.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be a strategy because it's always, you know, he did it, you know, the one with Minnesota, then the same thing with Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just, you know, sort of develop a second round guy and, you know, have a crazy owner who falls in love with, you know, max contract players.
Okay, and now we're going to stay in the Atlantic Division. We're going to talk about a team that's just as bad as the 76ers, even though. I don't know if they're going to stay bad for that long, depending on what they can get in free agency for the next 2 years. But Phil Jackson still has a lot of work to do in Gotham with the New York Knicks.
Yeah, his first season did not go as well as he thought it would.
No. I think he realized that being a general manager or a team president doesn't mean you're in control of things on the court. And I think I think it was tough for him to accept that until things really settled in and he realized, okay, I think losing might be the best deal here so that we can try to get as high of a pick as we could. And it still didn't work because they didn't even wind up in the top three in a three-player draft.
Yeah, you shut down Melo and – yeah, that's it's a lot harder than it looks. Maybe losing is the best, and maybe name recognition means absolutely nothing these days.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, the triangle, still a colossal failure.
But they don't have the players to run it with, so they have an opportunity here. So what do they do? They need a lot of things. They need everything outside of small forward / power forward, whatever Carmelo Anthony is going to be settling with playing in the future. So after this. you could pretty much pick any position right now, and people would say that's a good thing for the Knicks because they needed help there. So what do you see here? I know you're high on Moutier. You would consider him with the Sixers. So you like him here with the Knicks?
He would work well with them. They need a point guard. They haven't had a point guard. Shit, and how long?
Well, they had Kidd that 1 year in 2013, along with Felton as his backup. Would that count?
Okay, 1 year of how many? We're going way back.
Well, you have the great Charlie Ward.
Yeah, going back to Charlie Ward, the Heisman winner.
And then you had Chris Childs. You had Stephon Marbury.
Okay, so I guess we could say Marbury's the last real point guard that they had, and that was a long time ago.
Yeah, and that you could even argue if he was, you know, like a true blue point guard. He was more like a scoring guard, trying to pretend to be a point guard.
I'm trying. I'm just, you know, I'll accept.
Do you think Moutier would be something better than Marbury, or is he a different type of point guard?
Well, he's a different type of point guard because he reminds, you know, we both agreed, he reminds of the John Wall.
Yeah. He's got the size. He's good at angles. Like once he gets into a certain angle and then he slices through, he's got very good speed and he's very athletic. You know, he was going to play at SMU under Larry Brown, but his grades didn't pan out well, so he wound up playing in China. So when people say look at the parentheses on his, you know, his profile and say China, they're like, "Oh, wow, he must be a foreigner." It's like, "No. He's a true blue American out of Texas. He was like the player of the year in Texas 2 years in a row as a prep player, but he just couldn't make the grades at SMU. That's why he played internationally."
Yeah, and then, you know, that also becomes the exotic part of, you know, like Dante Exum, like, oh, who is he? He, you know,
man,
he destroyed Chinese talent. But then again, so did, like, you know, Lester Hudson and Stephon Marbury is destroying Chinese talent.
He's, like, winning championships in China. He's, like, a hero there.
Yeah, he's a three-time champion now there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, you know, the knock on that would probably be, you know, I haven't seen a consistent jump shot from him.
The Knicks have only this pick. They don't have any later first-round picks or any second-round picks. So they really got to get this one right. Phil Jackson does. If they pick Moutier, is he getting it right?
Well, no, not really, because they really need a big. And the problem is there's really no big you want to reach for at four. If they take, you know, another name is, you know, they fell in love like everyone else did with Kristaps. But he'll be booted out of the arena because he is basically...
It'll be like when Danilo Gallinari got picked. And Gallinari did okay for the Knicks, but they just weren't a fan of him because no one knew who he was, you know?
Yeah, because they wanted somebody else.
Yeah, and then there's Willie Cauley-Stein.
Yeah, who is really a...
defensive big.
He's a specialist.
Mm-hmm.
He's just Tyson Chandler. He's not going to give you, you know, you're not going to get what you need from...
And then here are two more. The other foreigner, Mario Hezonja out of Croatia, is kind of a slashing small forward, kind of like a better version of Marco Bellinelli. In terms of his athleticism, not as a shooter. And then there's Justice Winslow out of Duke. You see him there?
The word is Phil likes Justice Winslow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he liked him early on, and it's sort of like, I don't know about that.
So you would still stick with Moutier?
Well, yeah, because of the people, he seems to have the highest ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of, you know, at this stage of the game, you kind of need high ceiling.
Okay.
High reward guy.
All right, we're moving on now. We're going to stay in the East again, and this is the Orlando Magic. Now, I think things are looking up for the Orlando, even though they have a new coach in Scott Skiles. You know, I think they're going to find a way to keep Tobias Harris as a restricted free agent. Nikola Vucevic has had quite a good year. Victor Oladipo, to me, is a future star. And Elfrid Payton showed some signs of being something else, or something good, you know, at the point guard spot in his rookie year. So the Magic, I think they got something there, but they just need direction, and I do think they need a bit of a scoring punch. So what do you see here at number five with the Magic?
Well, yeah, you mentioned it was they have a problem now as they're starting to get people they want to hold on to, and they're still bad.
Yeah, and you when you look down the road and you say you want to keep these guys, is this the central cast you want to try to get to the playoffs with? Now, in the East, it's easier to get to the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. So I guess just simply said, the best pick for them would be Chris Stapps.
Porzingis.
Yeah, if you're going to keep Tobias. And
his nickname is the Zinger. So there's that.
Okay, sure.
You want to just call him Zinger?
I mean, you know, he's really the power forward. You know, he's really, that's really the only hole left they have.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to keep, you know, Vucevic and, you know, you keep Harris and you have the 1 and 2 you like. So by default, he is the best fit for the team because nobody else, you know, the problem with Orlando is if he goes higher, nobody else really in the top 10 fits their needs.
Well, I agree a little bit. Like, I mean, but you don't think a guy like Towns or Okafor could help him out?
Okay, fine. With the exception of the 1 or 2.
Okay. Okay. After the top 2.
I retract. I apologize. With the exception of the top 2 guys.
Do you think Winslow would be a bad fit because of the defensive mindset? Like, Scott Skiles is there now. So if you take If you take Winslow, you're telling yourself, okay, we're going to be a defensively minded team because I got Winslow, Okafor, Oladipo, I have Peyton, and I have as defensive backcourt, you know, to try to or wing defender. So
So that's the problem is, you know, under this scenario, they're keeping Tobias Harris. If they get rid of Harris, okay, Justice Winslow, Hizanga. They are players who they'd probably want to look at.
The one problem, though, is that Vucevic and Harris are not good defensive bigs. Do you think Collie Stein might be good here?
I think Kristaps is a better fit for the team.
Okay, because of the scoring punch.
Yes.
Okay. Who does he remind you of? Kristaps Porzingis out of Latvia.
Oh, he is. Did I go Bargnani? Yes, I want Bargnani on him.
Yeah, but better than Bargnani, though. He's not – Bargnani was more of a power.
Well, I don't – you know, I mean, if you're closest to a player, not the exact player. Again, we already had this with Brandon Roy.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, you want to get down to the minor.
You got to shrink him down. Yeah, you're looking at body to body, but you got to think kind of
game. You know, they have good defense. He might – you know, he's becoming too much of a stretch. Mm-hmm. And, you know – like I said, that just reminds me of you see the tape. I'm like, okay, this looks like Bargnani.
The one thing I saw in the workouts is that he's got crazy height. He's very tall. Like he is a legit 6'11". Yeah, he's legit. You know, so if he turns into a Dirk, I mean, obviously you won. I don't think he's a Dirk. Everybody who's 6'11" or taller and supposedly can shoot out of a foreign country is Dirk Nowitzki. So you got to be careful with these comparisons because you don't want an Andrea Bargnani. That's how Bargnani went number one. He was supposed to be the next Dirk. So
they were all supposed to be the next Dirk. Skeetishvili.
Yeah.
Yijian.
Jean. I love when you say Yijian Leon. Him and his chair. So we're going to go with Kristaps Porzingis at number 5. The Magic also have the number 51 pick, which is late in the second round. Since we're going with a scorer, I guess we can kind of go with offensively minded shooting guard. What about Tyler Harvey here? The shooter out of Eastern Washington. You like that?
Sure.
Sure.
It's the second round. Anybody, you can name any player, and I'll be like, okay.
He did not look good in the 5-on-5 workouts we were talking about in the combine, but he averaged well over 20 points a game at Eastern Washington. He was their do-it-all. He's a good shooter when he's at a standstill, so I'll go with him. Maybe he'll be a good complimentary piece to Peyton just to get some shooting there.
Sounds good.
And then we go to the Sacramento Kings, who have only one pick in the draft, and that is this one, the number 6 overall pick. First of all, they brought in George Karl in the middle of the year. They have an all-star in DeMarcus Cousins. They re-signed Rudy Gay early into the season. What kind of needs do you see here for the Sacramento Kings? Mainly defense?
Well, they need a leader, and not leader on the court. They need who's in charge. is, you know, because report
I think
is.
Gay, I think Gay's the leader of the team.
No, I meant front office. Who's making these picks? Because, you know, last year, supposedly, they were going to go for Peyton.
Well, Pete D'Alessandro just left for the Nuggets.
Yeah. And then the owner, they wanted to go for Elfrid Payton. The owner said, no, get Sauce Castillo. And we see how that turned out.
Sauce Castillo. You know how he got that name, right, Nick Stauskas?
Yeah, from
closed captioning. Somebody screwed up his name, called him Sauce Castillo, and it went viral on Twitter. It was hilarious.
It was perfect.
He was also the man who guarded Klay Thompson for most of that that 37-point quarter, so he's infamous now. He might turn out to be something, you know? I mean, he's Nick Stauskas. I know he was a bad pick because they had already had a scoring small forward in McLemore, so they picked him in back-to-back years, like you always say, but you know, the shooter out of Michigan, I don't think he's lost. I think he could be something down the road. I don't think he's going to be an excellent player, but you got to take your lumps, and definitely Nick Stauskas took his lumps this year thanks to Klay Thompson and Sauce Castillo. So no small forward this year, huh?
No, it's perfect time to go for Justice Winslow. Make it 3 years in a row. Why not become the Atlanta Hawks?
Are you really serious there?
No.
You don't think Winslow here? Now, Winslow, if he starts dipping below six, people are looking at that as like a steal.
No, it's just, I don't know. Their best bet is obviously Cauley-Stein.
I agree. I'm high on Cauley-Stein because even though he's a specialist, like you say, the size, the wingspan, and the ability to cover other people's mistakes defensively. I think he's really valuable in that regard, and that's all
that
has to do.
That the team has no real power forward. If Jason Thompson's your best power forward by default for like the last 5 years, and you know everybody else is a scorer, it's just one of those. You know, you fit perfectly. That's I don't know. That's just what I.
What so you, when you see Cauley-Stein, you see Tyson Chandler.
Yeah, no offensive game whatsoever. Doesn't seem like he wants one. Just content to, you know, do his thing.
Yeah, but he is a little bit of a different personality, not just the fashion, you know, the fashion that he always kind of comes out with, which is a little random, but just kind of, do you think he's a little too inner of a personality for Sacramento, where it seems like there's a lot of kind of weird vibes over there in terms of like who the leader is and different types of egos in the locker room? Do you think that's going to play off well, a guy who's kind of like inward?
Well, no, because now George Karl's team, and, you know, he's somebody who's commanded respect throughout his years, so it doesn't really matter how introverted, extroverted you are. I think he'll be, you know, I think the locker room will be a tight locker room.
Now, George Karl always has good point guards whenever he had success in most of his – at his stops, whether it be Seattle – I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank. Milwaukee and Denver. He always had good point guards. There are still good point guards to be had here, but if he goes six and Moutier and Russell are gone, do you think that trying to reach up to get guys like Payne or Tyus Jones, do you think that's a little too high?
There are good point guards. They're not great point guards out there.
You think you can find them in free agency?
You can find them in free agency. If Moutier falls down to six, they would be ecstatic.
Okay.
But, you know, it's just Cauley-Stein is the safer bet right now.
Okay. And now that was their only pick, so we're going to get away from Sacramento. We're going to talk about George Karl's former team, and that's the Denver Nuggets. This team's fucking mess. They're at number seven here. I don't even know what their needs are because I don't know what direction they're headed in. They still haven't decided on a new head coach. The rumor is that they're going to retain Melvin Hunt because nobody else wants the job, I would guess. What do you see here with the Denver Nuggets?
Yeah, it's the same old names that are coming out. It's D'Antoni and it's like, oh, you're just people who just apply for every job, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not they need an exorcism.
So they need to hire the exorcist.
They have the talent. It's just you need to get rid of Ty Lawson. Get rid of him, you know. He was the leader of that group. Fareed just, you know, Fareed and Wilson Chandler just seemed to follow along. They didn't seem to be – their names did not appear as much as Ty Lawson.
If they have it in mind to trade Lawson, like, or if they want to move him, that means they would need a point guard, but I don't know if they would reach to get any – like, I don't think they would reach to get any of those lower first-round type of point guards like we were just talking about in the Sacramento situation. So, you know, they got Gary Harris. He played decently. Nurkic wound up starting in some situations after they traded Mozgov. And you still got Fareed, who you just signed in the new deal. I think they need something defensively minded. I think Colley Stein might have been a good fit there too.
No, see, I disagree. I would say they need more. Go back to the true Denver style. They need to go back to the run and gun, and we're going to use the altitude. We're just going to make you run out of breath.
Okay, so if you want a scorer, you know, Winslow.
Justice Winslow.
You like Justice Winslow there? You say that he's kind of like James Harden.
I think he's a bigger Harden.
You see, I disagree there. I feel he's like a better version of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. I think he's a defensively minded small forward who can shoot a three every now and then, and he can attack the basket.
Well, that's what I see in the fact that I mean, you know, he's the Harden in the sense he can attack the basket,
mm-hmm.
which we haven't really said too many people could do that yet right now. So he's the one real person who's going to attack and. For a team that should run, you want somebody who's going to attack the basket. And as good as, you know, Gallinari has been, he's been injured a lot.
Yeah, I think he's at the end of his rope. I know he had a couple 40-point games at the end of the season, you know, when he started getting his legs back, but I think he's done. Like, I think we've seen the best out of Gallinari. So moving forward at small forward, whether it be Harris, whether it be a guy like Justice Winslow, I think that would be a pretty good option at this point.
Yeah, so, like, you know, Colley Stein might be good if you're going for that slow ball, but that team isn't built for it. You have to get rid of probably half your roster in order to...
Yeah, but Carl does value physicality, even on his even on a run-and-gun team, like when, you know... like in Denver, and they tried to get physical when he was there, and it didn't work. So you think they're just going to abandon it altogether and just kind of stay with their tradition in Denver with the altitude?
Well, that's what they should. That's what the team is built for. That's what Carl left, and they didn't really disassemble it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to go and become a slowdown team, you're now looking into a very long rebuild.
Okay.
Whereas I think you could get a sort of a short rebuild. You get rid of the, you know, the cancers, and then...
And also, if you get rid of Lawson, even though I don't think he's a starter per se, you still have Randy Foy. So if you got to start somebody, you still have him there.
Yeah, you still got him. He's nothing special, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, they could always... Do they have a second-round pick?
They do. The number 57 pick, they got in a trade from 2009 with the Clippers involving a player named Chick Sam. Tell me about Chick Sam.
Chick Sam was from Senegal. He played for – I remember he played for Detroit. He was on some big games against the Lakers. He played 5 years, 22 games.
And this is the benefits that they reap from that trade. They get the number 57 pick in the draft.
Go ahead. I will let you pick your own international draft and stash guy because –
Uh-huh.
They don't have many roster spots available. They don't have any free agents, so they're not going to get somebody who's going to come in, I think, and really...
I think Jatai, the guy from France, I think he's going to be gone. So, you know, I think Christmas will be gone. How about we go with Guillermo Hernan Gomez from Spain?
I like him.
Okay.
He
has a combination of two Spanish names, Hernandez and Gomez. So he's like he's like a super Mex.
Yes. he played next to Kristaps, and he is just a traditional banging center, and
they need that. I know Nurkic is kind of like that, but they need another one.
He looks like he could have a home in a few years.
Okay. And so we're going to be moving on here with the Detroit Pistons. Now, the Pistons like have already started to make a move there with bringing in Ersan Ilyasova. So, you know, Stan Van Gundy's state of mind of three-point shooting, it's already on. That, you know, right before Brandon Jennings tore his Achilles tendon, they seemed to find their way after they cut Josh Smith. It seemed like they were buying into what Stan was selling, and they were winning games. You remember that infamous video where he says, we're going to build a fucking wall on defense? You know, not the. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't the smartest coaching decision, but you know, I think people really bought into it. So, they still had a losing year though. It was Stan's first losing year as a head coach. So, what do you see here with the Detroit Pistons?
Yeah, they did better than I think a lot of people sort of expected.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really. They were bad, but not, you know, they were, once they got rid of Josh Smith, they were competitive for a while. But this is another pick that just seems to fit. You know, I like the Ilyasova trade because he can score a lot of, you know, he can score points fast.
Mm-hmm.
He has a deceptive quick shot.
I'll give you some options here, and a lot of them are at the small forward spot where the first one got plucked with Winslow just in the previous pick. We got Mario Hinzonja. We've got Stanley Johnson out of Arizona, whose name we haven't mentioned yet. We got Kelly Oubre from Kansas, who can also play shooting guard. Then shooting guards have not been picked yet. You got Devin Booker at Kentucky, RJ Hunter from Georgia State. Where are you kind of leaning to here?
Word is they've liked Mario from the early get-go, and that hasn't really changed.
Is it just when somebody's named Mario, do you just like them more naturally?
Because he could easily have the nickname Super Mario?
Yes. Now, it didn't help out Mario Chalmers. No one likes Mario Chalmers.
No one likes Mario Chalmers.
Could you call him an international because he was from Alaska, Mario Chalmers?
No, but the problem with Mario Chalmers is you have the Mario Super Mario, but it's also Lieutenant Principal Chalmers from Simpsons. So you have a good nickname with a Super Nintendo Chalmers. It doesn't... You know, it doesn't help, but you have a good or bad.
So this guy's going to inherit Super for Super Mario.
But
will he be better than Chalmers? I mean, you got to be the best Mario in the NBA to be Super Mario.
The thing about Hinzonja is I don't think we've seen a prospect who's been – have we really seen like a 6'8 Euro who's been this highly touted?
You know, Bellinelli – how tall is Bellinelli?
He was like 6'6".
6'6". Okay. But Bargnani was obviously taller than him. Those are both.
Bargnani was 7 foot.
Yeah, and then Saric is a natural big. If we're talking about slashers, you know, Dragic doesn't fit that bill. I think you got a point there. I think that in terms of international, a slasher at 6'8", I think he's kind of an original.
Yeah, that's the thing is there's really – I couldn't really find a comparison on him because – there's, you know, I'm like, it took a while. I'm like, he looked like an old school Michael Finley.
Okay.
Not really old
in
Michael
Finley. In the Dallas years when he played with Nash and Nowitzki, when he was basically a shooter, and then he would just go after the basket.
Yep. He, you know, he wasn't super fast, but he's athletic. You know, he very smart on the court, could play defense, but, you know, wasn't.
His analytics for his club team were good. Kevin Pelton for NBA for ESPN.com rated him like in the top like 10 among, you know, just give based on his actual numbers playing in for his club team, even though he played in limited minutes at times. He's had a couple of stinkers in some of the postseason games, but a lot of people think he's got that potential to be, you know, like you say, like just a good Euro slasher. So you think that the Pistons might go after that?
It's a good fit for them.
I mean, I just get – I hope that's not another Jonas Jerebko. That's all I'm trying to say.
Celtics don't seem to be complaining about him.
Yeah, but they're not complaining about him because he's not their number 8 overall pick.
Yeah, but Jonas also went through like 4 coaches, and then, you know, then it becomes that, well, I didn't draft him. I have no loyalty to him, and, mm-hmm. you know, they become just – you know, that was the old regime. They picked him. They're the one that gave him $20 million.
And then Stanley Johnson, you considered him?
No.
Okay.
I like him, though. I think he's got potential there. And then Kelly Oubre, I'm not so high, even though a lot of the scouts really like him because of his size at the small forward position. And he can shoot threes, which obviously Stan salivates over. Now we have here the 38th pick for the Detroit Pistons. You know, what are the main needs really for Detroit? We didn't even really touch on that.
Oh, what do they need? They need they answered a lot with Ilyasova, kind of.
Mm-hmm. A small forward who could attack the basket. That's kind of like Hinzanja. You know, Ersan Ilyasova is really a shooter. You know, he's Hedo. I call him Hedo Turkoglu Jr. That's what I call him.
Yeah.
Greg Monroe's on the market.
But they'll maybe re-sign him.
Maybe. I'm getting the feeling he's gone. Then someone will overpay for him. Because
so, kind of they need a backup.
Yeah. What about Rashawn Holmes from Bowling Green?
You already had him going somewhere.
No. We backed out. We did Cliff Alexander instead, I think. So, he's still there. What about Jarrell Martin at LSU? Or is that too low for him?
That might be too low for him. I think they're going to might continue with the shooting streak and just go for like a Joseph Young.
Oh, I like him. He's a two guard out of Oregon. He's listed as a point guard, but he is not a point guard. He's a shooter. He's one of those like Shannon Brown types that comes in and he just bombs away. Like he's fearless. I watched him play Wisconsin twice in the tournament. He is fearless. And Wisconsin was scared to death of him because of how good he was at manufacturing easy baskets for himself and how he could make tough shots. So I think Young, I think you got me all excited all of a sudden.
That would be a perfect fit in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Just come in.
He's a shooter.
He's a shooter, and, you know, like, that's what a lot of teams need, but that's what Van Gundy loves.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I like that one. I think you got that one good. The Charlotte Hornets. That's our next one. Dude, they need shooting in the absolute worst possible way. The worst.
They just need.
They were the bottom in field goal percentage. They were tops in assists. That was thanks to Kemba Walker and Mo Williams. But, you know, Lance Stephenson just didn't really do much for him, you know, field goal percentage-wise. Al Jefferson opted back in for his last year on his deal, which is good for them, but he's had injury woes. Their drafts have been so god-awful. From in the most recent years, you know, Noah Vonleh, I don't know what he's going to be. Cody Zeller, I don't know what he's going to be. I'm not a big fan of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, you know, in terms of being like a starter, even though some people would disagree with me. You like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist?
Yeah, for the number two pick, no, not for a 3-and-D guy.
Uh-huh. And so I don't
And
see...
before that was Bismack Biyombo and Kemba Walker. So you have 5 years in the lottery and you have
Kemba's
six picks
okay.
You get...
Kemba's okay. Bismack, no. I agree there. So Michael Jordan, I mean, it's just built in. They might do something that we just don't expect. But I think they need shooting in the worst way, and I'm going to step in. I'll just say Devin Booker at Kentucky makes sense.
All right, that's the simple logical pick.
Mm-hmm.
But since we're talking Charlotte, I really think we need to bring in maybe Miles Turner into the conversation.
As a
Only
center,
because
you already got Jefferson back.
Well, I mean, they drafted Zeller and then Vonleh, who are the same player.
So you don't like, but you don't. Not, are you saying that I'm you just, don't like Miles Turner?
No, I'm saying they. I'm saying they just draft horribly, and they're just gonna. We need another big guy who's the exact same player as the previous two we drafted.
The other one they talk about a lot is Stanley Johnson. I kind of consider
him the worst pick they possibly could make.
Why?
Stanley Johnson is a defensive guy.
A defensive shooting guard with athleticism.
Who Stanley Johnson can remind me of Aaron Gordon last year. So, like, a more defensiver Aaron Gordon, which is sad because Aaron Gordon
Did
had
you
no
say defensiver?
Game. Yes.
I think we just created a new word on the NBA team podcast. So, you don't like Johnson there.
He's like a Ron Artest for a team that needs scoring. You don't need Ron Artest.
Okay.
No, your pick is dead on. It's simple. I'm just trying to make conversation.
Well, I'm not used to getting compliments. You know how that goes.
Devin Booker is. You need a shooter. get somebody who can shoot.
Now, everyone compares him to Klay Thompson because, to be honest with you, I think it's because he looks like Klay Thompson. But, you know, he has some sort of characteristics that they share. He's got the straight shot. He's good off of the dribble. His agility is underrated. What did you see out of Devin Booker in Kentucky?
Kentucky, sadly, not much. It's
just the shooting.
He was just a shooter. He has, you know, he has the size, and he has the shot, and that's what he's going to rely on. He doesn't play D. He doesn't want to play D. He doesn't look extremely like strong.
No, like, he's not. I think he's not going to go to the hole. I think he can gain upper body strength with his mold, but he doesn't have it yet. It's going to be like Stauskas. I think he's going to have to learn how to play defense in the NBA.
Just, you know, you remind me of like a J.J. Redick. It's just he's going to rely on shooting and not much else.
Yeah, but look how J.J. Redick ended up. If you get a guy like Redick at number 9 in Booker, that's a pretty good deal.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying in this day and age when basically defense will keep you in the league, you really have to be a really good shooter to just be a really good shooter. Mm-hmm. And he possibly could be one.
Excuse me about that. I was trying to drink something here. So we agree there. They have the number 39 pick. I don't know. I'll give you this one because I have no idea.
39 pick. They need not
good one.
I was going to say they need size, but not too much size. They need like a nice small forward. Maybe like
what about where's that? It's at 30. What about JP Tokoto?
I was going to say Anthony Brown, but those are sort of similar players.
Between the two, I think Tokoto would get picked first because I think he's got more athleticism.
Well, he get picked first because he's from North Carolina, and obviously we learned with Charlotte.
They did that with P.J. Harrison and Raymond Felton and Sean May.
Yes, Sean May.
That's a perfect fit. So, you know, Tokoto was a guy that, you know, he declared for the draft. People were shocked because if he had come back, North Carolina would have been a surefire number one going into preseason. So when he declared, it kind of surprised people the same way it did with I can't remember who the guy that went early out of North Carolina was the year before. I think it was Reggie Bullock. And so when Tokoto went pro, people were like, oh, that was kind of curious. He went to the 5-on-5 drills, and he was one of the guys in the 5-on-5 drills that really helped himself, and also in the max vertical where he jumped really high. So he's got a lot of athleticism, but offensively he's a work in progress for sure. But he can attack the basket.
Well, the thing about him is, like, you know, it's a bad NFL analogy, but he wasn't good, but anytime they show a replay, he was always around.
Mm-hmm.
He was always where, you know, he was somehow always near the ball, always, you know, if the more you see him on camera, it's like, well, you know, he's doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's always one of those, like, linebackers, like, well, he's not really good at tackling, but he knows where to be. And
yeah, a roamer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we like there for the Hornets. There are two picks here. We got Devin Booker out of Kentucky and JP Tokoto out of North Carolina. Now we're going to go with the Miami Heat, who did not make the playoffs. First of all, were you surprised they didn't make the playoffs?
Kind of, given the team that they had. They should have, talent alone should have put them over the top with, you know, just Wade and Dragic alone. But basically now, I think we can both agree, the draft is sort of looking very straightforward right now, very easy.
Mm-hmm.
This seems to be the first wild card position.
It gets muddy from the Knicks spot to the Nuggets spot. It gets a little tough. And then after that, it starts to get a little elementary of what teams need and what they might go with. At least in the first round. In the second round, nobody knows.
Exactly. But this is like the one, this is a wild card position. You can name like 5 people and they all sort of make sense.
Yeah, I think Stanley Johnson here makes sense.
Stanley Johnson makes sense. Sam Decker makes sense. You can even say Miles Turner with you know, a Bosch understudy.
Yeah.
Also
the fact that Hassan Whiteside might not be back if he gets overpaid elsewhere.
But I think he's there for one more year.
No, I heard that they had optioned him so that he will be eligible for free agency, that they could not get an exemption for him.
I'm not so sure on that.
Are you disagreeing with me?
I just said I'm not so sure. And trailing well, off.
Then we'll just keep that. We'll just keep the Whiteside part away, and we'll just assume that he's back because I think he's going to wind up staying there anyway. Because the Miami Heat know what they have, and I don't think any of the other teams are going to try to bank.
Well, that's the thing is they got all their low price free agents in already, which will get to free agency. But you know, Henry Walker and getting Beasley back and Whiteside
Tyler
and Chris Johnson.
Johnson
Tyler Johnson. Yeah. So they've already gotten their bench solidified. So. A Stanley Johnson does
well,
make sense.
That breaks the Johnson-Johnson rule. You can't have two Johnsons on one team.
Why?
It's not a rule. I'm just making that up.
a very good rule.
If that was the NFL, I don't think we could have any NFL teams. I think half the teams are named Johnson. What about the Sam Decker though? Out of Wisconsin, the small forward who's really stepped up in the tournament. I've heard his name around this part. I think he's really, really good, but he's just so inconsistent.
Well, that's why I said you can name me a couple of names, and that I could buy all of them.
Mm-hmm. I'll go with placeholder here, best available at this point. I'll go with Stanley Johnson. You would disagree here? You want to pipe for someone else?
Oh, Stanley Johnson seems right.
Stanley Johnson, okay. What do you like out of him? Outside, I know you're not big on his shooting, but I think
defense.
Yeah, but his athleticism is so good.
He's an athletic defensive guy, and once he learns to find an offensive game, he could be. You know, he's going to a team where he doesn't have to be the guy.
You know who he reminds me of? Even though I don't know if he'll pan out to be the same kind of player, he reminds me of Kawhi Leonard, like a guy who's just. You know, I don't see – I mean, Ron Artest makes sense, you know, because he's – you know, that's kind of a 3-and-D. He was one of the original 3-and-D dudes. But I think Johnson's one of those guys that might be able to guard somebody man-to-man anywhere on the court. I think he has that potential to do that. So I like him there. I thought he was Arizona's best player last year. You know, Aaron Gordon was the best player for Arizona the year before, but I think Johnson's got more agility and he's got the ability to the guard the three and the two in the two position, which is something Gordon can't do.
Yeah.
And then they have here the number 40 pick, which is kind of like right before the middle of the second round. So, what do you see here in terms of needs? You know, you got Bosch with the injuries. Dwayne Wade is probably going to be back, even though there's some rumors about his player option being declined and he might look elsewhere for a different deal, but I don't think that's going to happen either. They need some scoring, and you just pick Johnson, who's more of a defensive guy. He might not help you out offensively in a hurry. So you see offense here?
I don't see a roster spot for them in the second round.
I think they can find room for a roster spot here. I don't think they'll have any problem cutting some of those D-League guys that they brought up. Let me see here. What about Pat Connaughton out of Notre Dame?
You like him.
I like him a lot because I thought he may have been Notre Dame's best player. I thought Jerrion Grant was their best player for the longest, and then I saw Pat Connaughton in these workouts. He does a 44-inch max vertical. He ran all over the place in the 5-on-5 drills. I mean, he was just all athlete. He is a baseball player, but he wants to play in the NBA. I think Connaughton might have a chance there, and I think he fits Spoelstra's needs as like an undersized, you know, small forward or power forward who can just come in there and snag rebounds, which he's really good at.
All right.
I know I'm reaching here, but you know, you think Connaughton would be too much of a reach?
There is no reaching in the second round, outside of let's say the first five picks, maybe first four picks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those who basically fell from the first round.
And he's a good 3-point shooter.
It's a crapshoot. So
yeah, Connaughton's a good 3-point shooter. So I got to pipe in there and say that too. So I think he can provide a lot, even though before the combine he was on nobody's radar because everyone thought he was just an undersized small forward. You know, but I watched him play Kentucky at him. He gave him fucking problems. Like, and I thought to myself, this dude's a fucking athlete. You know.
Oh, okay.
All right, so that was me just making my case for Pat Connaughton. So for the Connaughton family, you're welcome. We're going to talk about a team that feuded with the Miami Heat for the Eastern Conference crown for a couple of years, and now they're both here in the lottery. I think one of these guys is not going to be there for very long, and that's the Indiana Pacers. Do you think this is kind of like a freak occurrence for the Pacers being in the lottery like this?
Yeah, they didn't want to be in the lottery. They really tried not to, and they fell short. They might have costed him the, you know, they got too good to be to get the guy they really wanted in Cauley Stein. So, you know, I don't see it as a bad thing. They have a couple options here they could go with.
I've heard rumors about Miles Turner at Texas. I heard that Larry Bird desperately wants Willie Cauley Stein, and if he has to move up, he'll do it.
Yes, that's the thing, is he wants Cauley Stein, and he might not have what it takes to get him.
No, I think they have different pieces like a Rudesh and a George Hill. I think they can move somebody if they had to. Remember, George Hill was part of a different trade with the Pacers that involved Kawhi Leonard going to the Spurs. Do you see – I mean, we can't factor this in because we don't know. I don't want to play fantasy trade machine here, but what do you see a trade here with Indiana where they try to move up, or do you think they'll settle here and take a guy like Cameron Payne, who I heard a lot of rumors about that Indiana might take him?
They could try to trade up. Like, Payne is one of the two names I was going to give you. The other one would be Lyles.
Okay. I don't like Lyles there. I don't. I think Lyles is a little overrated.
So he's kind of slipping.
I think he's slipping. I don't know what the GMs think. They like Lyles because of the mid-range game and the fact that he's a 6'11 small forward, which gives him a lot of mismatches. But I think he's got a lot to learn. I think defensively he's kind of lazy. And, you know, he does have a mean streak, though, which some GMs – I mean, you can't write that on your resume, has mean streak. But I think somebody – I think teams really like that. I think they like players that get under the skin of another player.
Yeah, but the thing about Cameron, you like Payne more than I do, but
he's a good shooter. He's small, but he has the ability to play shooting guard if you had to switch him, and he's a very good ball handler.
The sad thing is, to me, he reminds me of George Hill, and then you're just replacing the same player with the same player.
Yeah, it's
so
true.
I'm like, it's not really.
So you're not going with Payne in this one.
No, I'll defer to you on this. It makes sense. I can, like I said, that was one of the two names I was going to toss out, and then you tossed out the other one, so.
If they can't get Cauley Stein, is Miles Turner a good consolation? More of a shooter and wider.
He's a good consolation, but, you know, like I said, they have sent out word that they do like Payne.
Yeah, that Chad Ford had said that on Twitter the moment the combine had started. They said, "I'm hearing rumors that Indiana likes Payne. Maybe it's a red herring, but I if you hear it so much, you got to start thinking it might be true." The number 43 pick in the second round, you know, we went with point guard. They might need some size in case Roy Hibbert decides to leave, or if they try to trade him, which is not out of the running either. So you like a big here?
Mahamadou Diaye.
Okay, you'll go with the French. I think he's from Senegal, but he lives in France. He was originally from Senegal, but he played in France. Am I saying that right?
Sounds good. Sure. It's second round picks, you know.
It's like
be...
when they have these club teams and they say they play in this country, but they weren't originally from that country. You know, they were transported. You know, so.
Oh, yeah, well, it's just the same thing as, like, you know, Andrew Wiggins is always will always be from University of Kansas, not from Canada. And,
yeah,
you know, Emmanuel Mudiay came from Congo, you know, from went to Texas.
And Serge Ibaka, who got Spanish citizenship, even though he's from the Congo.
Yeah, so Brandon Jennings will always be from Latinoamérica, Roma.
Yeah, Emmanuel Mudiay is from China, you know.
Yeah, so it's just one of those who knows where. But
Jete was a guy who went to the combine. No one knew who he was. Played pretty big, like he played for his size. Like when it wasn't, you know, like Bismack Biyombo is a big man that doesn't play up to his size. You know, Jete does. He seems like he makes an impact with his size, with his strength. He does have some strength on him too. So, you know, offensively, rotten. He's rotten. But I think defensively he could help you out. So maybe, you know, like Ian Mahimi, who's from France too, maybe that would be a good fit. somebody that can kind of, you know, kind of ease him in.
You know, see what happens with the Hibbert thing, and then you have, you know, just keep him over there for a year and bring him over.
Okay, now we're moving on to the Utah Jazz. I think the Jazz are in a great position here because even though they didn't make the playoffs, they had a losing record. They were 39-43. You know, they were the best defensive team in the league in terms of points allowed. Things are looking up for him. Gordon Hayward had a really good year after signing a max agreement. I think they really found something in the post with Rudy Gobert, you know, kind of in the vein like we were just talking about Willie Cauley-Stein. I think Rudy Gobert is kind of what you're aiming for when you pick a guy like Cauley-Stein. So they really got a really good pick there out of the 2013 draft. Trey Burke, Alec Burks, who they just re-signed coming off of an injury. I think they need shooting, and I think they need athleticism. So what do you see here?
So are you going to say Sam Decker?
You know, is he basically Gordon Hayward?
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
But he is white and it's Utah.
Man, you're really nailing it on the head here, aren't you?
I mean, oh, no, I don't – Say, you know, Sam Decker, he's just an energy guy. They don't need – in theory, they're happy with all their starters.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not drafting – I don't see somebody like a Turner doing anything there.
No, I don't see that either. I don't see a point guard getting picked here.
I don't see any guards. I don't see – you know, you could go for a big man.
Maybe, but you need a scoring big man like Turner, like you said. Maybe Kaminsky, another white guy.
I was going to say, okay.
Every time we go with Utah, it's like, you know, maybe it's the Mormon thing. I don't know. You know, it all goes back to Rodman when he made fun of the Jazz because of the Mormons. So, you know, everybody just automatically assumes, oh, well, it's Whiteyville out in Utah. But, you know, I mean, they did have Karl Malone, who was like one of the most country bred African American players ever. He was from the rural part of Louisiana, and he was the best player the Utah Jazz ever had. So, complimented by John Stockton, the whitiest of all the white point guards. You know.
Well, what about Trey Lyles then? There.
Do you think that's a little high for him, or do you think that's about right? Not a lot of power forwards are gone at this point. You still got Kevon Looney. You got Bobby Portis, McCullough, Montrezl Harrell. I'll make a case for Kelly Oubre. You see that?
Then what are you going to do? Well, where's he going to get missed behind Hayward?
Well, he's a guard. He can play guard, even though he's got the size of a small.
He can, but I don't think he really can.
So that we'll shoot that down. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson as a defensive athlete at the small forward position.
I think that's too high for him. You know, again, what about Decker? Just the energy guy, can play multiple positions.
That's the second time you said his name, so I'm going to go with Decker.
I'm just trying to.
What do you like out of Decker? Like, if you watched the tournament, what did you see out of Sam Decker? Because you can't go by regular season because he didn't perform well. You got to look at the nitty-gritty games where I thought he played his best ball. So what did you see?
Energy.
Okay. A guy who's got that extra step to him to try to make a play.
That guy who just didn't really stop. He wasn't really good in anything.
Mm-hmm.
But just, you know, sort of like a nice system fit and will be, you know, hardcore on the D.
And he's a tremendous athlete. He is. Don't let that buzz cut and Wisconsin background fool you. He is a tremendous athlete.
Oh, yeah.
So there was.
So I don't know. Well, who do you see?
I think Decker's fine. Lyles, you kind of threw that curveball. I mean, I'm starting to reconsider it. I think Miles Turner is another one. But, I mean, it's tough because, you know, when you go to the Pacers and the Jazz, they do have multiple needs. They do, you know, even though they don't – they're not in a position where they have to win right away. I do feel like there are some positions here where you have guys that are effective. And you can go in completely different directions. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
it's
they
hard
have
to
needs,
say.
But the problem is, they're young to where they like everybody they seem to have.
So we'll go with Decker. We'll just place him there. They have two second round picks. I'm sorry. And one of them, let me take a look if you want to just cover for me and see how who they got here.
41.
The 42 and 54. They got the 54th pick in that Cavs trade where they had the. You remember when the Cavs had to shed that cap money with Carrick Felix and Eric Murphy and Malcolm Thomas, and they had to shed that money so they can get Kevin Love. So they took on non-guaranteed contracts. Well, in that trade, they the Cavaliers gave away the 54th pick to the Jazz. So they have two second rounders here, number 42 and number 54. Let's go with a guard at 42. The problem is, you know, at the guard spot at 42, I'm not sure what they're going to be able to find. What about Michael Frazier II out of Florida, a shooter?
He could go higher, but sure.
Okay. No, we'll stick him there. If he goes higher, we might have to switch things up. Number 54, we'll say
international.
International, stash guy.
International, just name any international guy you can think of.
What about, who is the Brazilian out of,
George Lucas?
His name is George Lucas on some, but the name that they're giving him is George DePaula.
So. Oh, yeah, George DePaula. No, he's rising up, and he might even sneak into the bottom of the first round. So top
that's
of the
too early, you say.
So, yeah, that's going to be about, like a...
If we want to go with a Euro guy, because they did it with Rudy Gobert, let's see here.
Oh, the Timothy Luwawu?
Oh, Luwawu? That is a small forward, right? Or no, he's a shooting guard out of France, Timothy Luwawu.
Yeah.
And you got the French connection, huh? You see what I did there? With Rudy Gobert. So, you see that?
Does that work?
I guess it works.
Why not? Second round.
Luwawu. I just like saying that. Timothy Luwawu. Did you watch him at all?
I watched some of him.
He's okay. Just a French guard, basically.
Couple years from being.
He ain't no Batum, though, huh?
Nah, Batum was 6'8".
Yeah.
This guy, he's 6'6", I want to say, and he was athletic. But, you know, again, Euros are always, well, weak and athletic, and he didn't, you know, is it another year or so away?
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're getting to the end of the lottery here. We got two more teams left. They're both from the Western Conference. Now we're going to go with the Phoenix Suns. The Suns, it seemed like things were looking up, and then they made the trade involving Isaiah Thomas and Goran Dragic, and now it's looking all down.
They pulled the plug on themselves.
It's so weird. I don't know how they even did it, but they blew themselves up. They blew it up. I sound like Charlton Heston of Planet of the Apes. You blew it up. And so they have the number 13 pick here. I think they have a couple of different needs, but one of the needs they have is intangible. They need a superstar. They need to sign a big name, just like they did with Nash in 2004, and just like they tried to do with LeBron James because they had the cap space, but they weren't. They knew they weren't going to be able to convince him to go there. But they need a superstar. That's what they're missing. So that's something you can't find in the draft, especially at number 13.
No, and they also need size because the Morris twins are not. They're not going to do it for you. So,
okay,
I'll give you two names.
Okay,
will be Turner and Kaminsky.
What about Kevon Looney at UCLA?
Too high.
You sure?
I'd see that's kind of a reach.
So you like Turner there, even though they have the Morris twins and Alex Len.
Well, they have Alex Len. The Morris twins aren't that good.
How dare you say that?
Which one is good? Which one's going to be good today? One's usually good. One sucks. The next day, the other one.
You are
right.
Not... That is true. Like sometimes you'll see the stat line, and Marcus has a great game, and Markieff doesn't. And then the next day, Markieff has a great day, and Marcus doesn't. It doesn't really make any sense.
So it's just, you know, it seems like you a Miles Turner. You need the size.
Now he has Texas. He has Rick Barnes-itis. where you go to Texas, you underachieve, you still make the tournament, but you don't do much in the tournament. So you kind of have to go to the workouts and prove your worth. So what do you see out of Miles Turner here? He's got some outside game to him. You know, he can shoot a bit. He's got a very wide body, but he's a legit 6'10", 6'11 guy.
Yeah, well, it'll give you size.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as good as Alex Len is, he hasn't stayed healthy in his 2 years with freak, you know, finger and toe
injuries. And he doesn't have
injuries.
Great upper body strength. You know, he's not a strong dude. Alex Len isn't. You know, so I think Miles Turner can provide some of that.
Yeah, so, well, who are you thinking?
I was thinking, I didn't think of Kaminsky at all, even though Hornacek might fall in love with him with the shooting. I like Looney. I think Trey Lyles might be a good fit, especially if Gerald Green leaves because in free agency, because even though Lyles is not really a small forward, I think he might be able to come in there and just hammer away for a little while until they find one, you know, or if the guy that they have in there, like PJ Tucker, you start him at small forward and then you can have Lyles at the four. I think he could be okay there. You want to debate that one between Lyles and Turner?
No.
Okay.
That's where the slide ends. It's, you know, I think we both agree with they need the size more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we'll go with Turner there. And then they had the number 44 pick. As crazy as it sounds, I think they need a point guard.
I was going to say they need a shooting guard.
A shooter?
Because let's say they keep him and they lose Gerald Green, now they need a bench. You know, I was gonna say like a Michael Qualls.
Well, Qualls is gone already. I had him with one of the Philly picks. So,
well, of course, because Philly took everybody.
Well, Hanlon is kind of a shooter, but a lot of people see him as a point guard.
Norman Powell.
Norman Powell out of UCLA, a lot of people see him rising, but he might dip too. And then the buddy that you already mentioned from Stanford, also from the Pac-12, Anthony Brown. You want to go with Powell here?
I can go with Powell.
Okay, we'll go with Norman Powell. He was one of the guys that I believe he came in with Kyle Anderson and Shabazz Muhammad. And he was sort of the one, and the other one was Jordan Adams, and it was Adams and Powell that really was kind of like the meat and potatoes of the team. They were the ones that worked the hardest, whereas Anderson and Shabazz were kind of lazy frankly. And so,
yeah,
you know, they were the grunt players. You know, I know they had a bad year. UCLA did, but they did make the Sweet 16 because they were able to play UAB in the second round instead of Iowa State. So they were able to make it the second round. They lost to Gonzaga, and so they did have a somewhat impressive array of talent there between Looney, Norman Powell, and then Steve Alford's son Bryce, who's the point guard there. So yeah, Powell might be a good fit. You know, Jordan Adams wound up sneaking in to like late into the first round or early in the second to the Grizzlies. So maybe history repeats itself.
Possibly.
And then we have the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think everyone's surprised they didn't make the playoffs, including Scotty Brooks, who's out of a job now. Billy Donovan is the new head coach from Florida after a long string of success there with the Gators. He's now going to finally take his chances in the pros. Kevin Durant's going to the last year of his deal. Russell Westbrook had an historical year statistically, but it didn't help the team because the supporting cast just could not pick up the pieces after Durant's injury. So what's the needs here? What are the needs here for the Thunder, outside of obviously getting back in the playoffs?
They need a point guard.
A backup point guard, like a true point guard?
Backup point guard because, you know, when Westbrook went out, that was a big hurt. And then, you know, this is the time where the point guards start running off the board. So,
okay, now we still have DeLon Wright, and we also have Jerian Grant from Notre Dame and Tyus Jones at Duke. Can
yeah.
I make a case for one guy outside of that position? Trey Lyles at small forward? To back up Durant.
Yeah, but if you're backing up Durant, I don't.
I mean, he's kind of like he'd basically be filling in for what Jeremy Lamb was supposed to do.
I don't know. I just see more. I see more of a need of a point guard.
Okay. So
given that's the way the team is run through there.
Okay, you got three options here: Jerian Grant at Notre Dame, DeLon Wright at Utah, and Tyus Jones at Duke.
You like Grant, and he seems to be a little higher than everyone else on the board.
He's a really great athlete. He is. I think he could play shooting guard in the future, but have the court vision of a point guard. You know, but he's got great athleticism. He's the son of Harvey and the nephew of Horace, I believe, unless it's the other way around, who both played in the NBA at the power forward position. And he's got that. He's got the same like body type as his uncle and his dad, but he's a guard. You know, and he's really I just like his game for the NBA. I think it'll fit well. You know, I like Connaughton too. I just like that Notre Dame team. Maybe I'm just a big Abba Jones for that Notre Dame squad that they had.
I think that might be the case. Like, I think he's already peaked, and
it's true. You know. I think that we saw the best out of him.
So, but no, he definitely fits a need that okay. they.
So you like Jerian Grant?
Yeah.
I walked you into the room there. Okay, and then they have the number 48 pick. What kind of other need do they need outside of a backup point guard?
Do they even have roster space? I don't know there.
Well, then, so you're saying that they might do something like they did with Josh Eustis with Stanford, where they didn't guarantee
Well, they need contract. They need to now pick him up this year.
Well, you don't have to, though, huh?
You don't have to, but how many agents are going to tell you to go try out for Oklahoma City knowing
that they might just cut you?
They just screwed, you know, they screwed him over.
So you need a little bit of bench help, but you can go in any direction there.
Well, you're Rashawn Holmes.
Rashawn Holmes from Bowling Green, who we talked about a couple times. Okay, we'll go with Holmes.
You seem, you know, they need sort of just bench help, and he is just sort of bench.
Mm-hmm. That can work, you know, a banger. They definitely need one. Even if they bring back Enes Kanter. Enes Kanter's not a banger. He's a scorer. You know, he likes to shoot outside, and he can rebound, but he rebounds kind of off of, like, long misses and stuff. He's not like a – that's why him and Favors probably wasn't as good of a fit as Favors and Gobert are, because Favors and Gobert love to live in the paint. You know, Kanter was not a paint guy, you know.
Well, here's the thing. They have to sign Kanter. Unless they get some crazy, somebody maxes him out, they essentially have to re-sign him because it's just the Harden trade. Uh-huh. You know, you can't say, well, you got nothing for Harden in the end. They have to sort of save face by signing him, don't you think, or no?
Yeah, but the problem is if you pay any more than $12 million, it's starting to look like you're really overpaid.
Again, with the exception of some crazy... You know, some crazy offer.
I know you're looking into the new cap, so you might be able to get him for 12 and be able to re-sign Max for Durant and Westbrook. I think that'll be hard anyway, because if you go into the new cap's numbers and you re-sign Durant and Westbrook, they're going to demand more than the 20 to 25 that they could get now. I think they might be able to reach over that, and then you're going to really have no cap room anymore because you've got Durant, Westbrook, Ibaka and Kanter all wreaking your cap. I think that would be a risk, but Cantor's numbers were so good after he got traded to Oklahoma City on the offensive end that maybe he is worth the risk for Sam Presti.
Okay.
I mean,
I was just tossing that question out.
I don't know if he's going to work out for him. It's a risk, but you know, and it's also Billy Donovan likes him. You know, I think Donovan will because he values shooting. And Kanter is a shooter, so maybe that's just the way they're going to go. That's going to be finishing up the lottery portion of the NBA draft preview that we're doing here, and be sure to listen to part two of our draft preview on the next go-around, where we're going to be talking about the teams that are outside of the lottery, some who are not in the playoffs, and then some that might surprise you, depending on how high and how low they are. But make sure to listen to part two to be continued.